brought two couples. Both of them are newlyweds, per se. On this side, we have Dan and Rachel. Aren't they cute? On this side, John and Sean. 1, 2, 3, aw.
Aww.
Yes. So Dan, just how much do you love Rachel?
Before I answer that question, could I just, Rachel, I wanted to give you some flowers. I bought these from a little orphan to help him pay for medicine, and I wanted to give these to you for our 40-day anniversary. What was the question?
How much do you love Rachel?
How much do I love Rachel?
Yes.
How much time do you have?
One sentence.
Okay. I love her more than the ocean is deep. I love her more than there are stars in the sky and more sand than there is. I'm sorry. It's really
important. So on the other hand, John, how much do you love Sean?
I love her very much. She completes me.
Aww.
And I have a friend for you also.
We were in chemistry class together in college, which is when we first found that we had chemistry together. She was sitting at the desk next to me, and remember, lovely bumper is you. And you dropped your pencil there, and I went down to get it, at the same time, and our heads just bumped, and then right there, the gaze in our eyes was, we just loved it. And we knew then that we would be soulmates together forever.
Aww.
It was a beautiful moment.
So where did you two first meet?
Well, we have a cute story also. We met at summer camp about 10 or 11 years ago, and I hit her in the face with a football. And when she came to, I told her we'd been dating for the whole week.
She was just so amazing. Then we went out shoe shopping together and purse shopping, and then we went to the beach there in Chicago and just walked along as we watched the sunset over the city.
Beautiful.
One of the most amazing days of my life.
So where was your first date?
Place. We went to the BK. Sized it. That's right. We did it by halogen light.
The last question. You guys got a minute? Maybe? Yes. How did you ask her to marry you?
Well, my family had taken a vacation. Alan, Josiah, and Andrew remember this. We went out to Europe together. And we toured Venice and the canals. It was so beautiful. And went to Rome for a few days. And then we ended up in Paris, actually. And we went up the Eiffel Tower. And you remember, lovely pumpkin pie. The sun was setting there. And in the sky, the clouds were perfect. And the birds. And I just got down on one knee at the top of the Eiffel Tower. And I said, you are my destiny. You're just jealous.
So how did you ask Sean to marry you?
It's kind of cute, actually, isn't it, honey? I got evicted from my apartment. Told her I needed a place to stay. Figured we'd better get married first.
Loved their wives, right? Both of them said they completed them and they were wonderful. But what changed after that? As the interview went on, how did Dan treat Rachel?
Like a queen.
Like a queen. What else? And love of his life. Was it almost sick?
Yes.
Now, John and Sean, on the other hand, how did John start treating Sean?
Armrest,
which is not the right height. So that went well. His words by saying, "I love you, Sean," and telling everyone, "I love Sean," meant nothing. Your message means squat if your actions don't follow suit. And as you can see, it's true. He can say, "I love Sean" all day. He can even tell romantic stories and make them up. But if he treats her like that, do you really think he loves her? Probably not. Everyone turn to Titus 1:15. Nothing is pure. In fact, both their minds and consciences are corrupted. They claim to know God, but by their actions they deny him. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for any good thing. It makes sense. To the pure, all things are pure. If you are pure of heart, if you are pure of mind, if you are pure in your actions, you are pure. Very good. If you are corrupt, even in one way, let's say you're pure maybe on the outside, but in the inside you have maybe thoughts you shouldn't do or shouldn't have. Maybe you say things you shouldn't ever so often, and you really don't care. Then you, if you have that corrupt part in you, you are corrupt. And that's not to say that just because you have one problem or one sin that you're dealing with that you're corrupt, that you're not pure, all of these things. But the point is acknowledgement. The point is acknowledging that if you have this problem, you have to deal with it, and you have to be cleansed to be useful to God. Verse 16, they claim to know God, but by their actions they deny him. Last part hurts. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for any good thing. It's really to the point. He really wasn't pulling any shots here. He just, straight to the point. You cannot be used. If you are unpure in your heart, because these thoughts, these things that you are doing that you're not dealing with, are clouding your mind. They are clouding your heart to where God cannot speak to you clearly. Therefore, you are unfit for the purpose that God has made you for, which is terrible. Every one of you has been made for a purpose by God Himself. He chose you from the beginning that you would have a purpose in His time, in your life. But if we keep doing immoral things, if we don't listen to him, if we just go through the motions, then it means nothing. Turn over to 1 John 2, please. This is pretty similar to the Titus passage, but I like that it adds a little bit to the end. 1 John chapter 2, we're going to read verses 3 through 6. We know that we have come to know him if we obey his commands. Man who says, "I know him," but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But if anyone obeys his word, God's love is truly made complete in him. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must walk as Jesus did. It's that simple. Think about the people you're surrounded with. think about a coworker perhaps, maybe you work with, maybe they've stolen a candy bar or something small like that. If they claim to be a Christian and you see them doing that, do you believe them? No. Let's say even, let's say even you have a friend, maybe they have a language issue, maybe they curse and swear and they have no problem with it, but they come to church every morning, they're the loudest one singing praise and worship, and they're dancing around. Is that real? Is it just going through the motions? Your message doesn't mean anything if your actions don't follow suit with it. Just like Dan and Rachel, you can guess pretty confidently that he is totally madly in love with her because of his actions. Yes, they were staged a bit, but even in everyday life, we know that Dan loves Rachel without a doubt because he does so in action. We should be the same way to God. We have a relationship with God, not the same as a husband, wife, or boyfriend, or girlfriend, but if we show him the respect that he's due, we show him the love that is due, then we are pure and we are useful as vessels for him. What I like about 1 John is that at the end of it, it does say that in verse 5, but if anyone obeys his word, God's love is truly made complete in him. That's what each of our desires of our heart should be, for God's love to be made complete in our life, to find our purpose, for him to speak through us to others, to have an impact. Someday, whenever, if you were to die tomorrow, die 10 years from now, whatever, what would your legacy be? What would your impact be? What would people say about you? Would they say they loved God through and through? They weren't perfect, but they strived to be in everything they did. And there is no doubt in my mind that the passion they showed for God was real. Is that what you want people to say? If so, then you have to do the action. People aren't going to say that. People aren't going to know you as that if you don't act like it. There's a quote, sometimes it's been attributed to Abraham Lincoln, but who knows. It says, you may fool all people some of the time. You can even fool some of the people all the time. But you can't fool all the people all the time. You may have a nice charade going on right now, and even to yourself. You may be blinded to the fact that something is wrong in your life. But if you have something wrong in your life and you keep just shoving it under the rug, I don't want to acknowledge it. I'm just going to go on with life and I'm going to be fine. It'll go away eventually. It's not going to impact my life. It will. And people will notice it. And whatever message that you try to give to someone will be tarnished because of that. Turn to 2 Timothy 2:15. Timothy 15 says, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a workman who does not need to be ashamed and who correctly handles the word truth. That's what I want to be. I don't want to be ashamed. I don't want to have to hide. Like Adam and Eve in the garden, they knew that they had sinned against God, so they hid. I don't want to have to feel like I have to hide from God. I don't want to have to feel like I have to hide from my friends, my family, my coworkers, whoever it is. I want to show them the real me at all times. I want to show them that I do love God. I'm not a perfect person, but to show them that through God's grace and mercy, he still loves me, and that he can fix any imperfection I have if I give him the opportunity to. If you go on down to verses 20 through 22, I like it in the NASB better than I do the NIV. It says, now in a large house, there are not only gold and silver vessels, but also vessels of wood and earthenware, some to honor, some to dishonor. Therefore, if a man cleanses himself from these things, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified, useful to the master, prepared for every good work. Now flee from youthful lust and pursue righteousness. Faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. I think that's beautiful. It really describes different things about us. We are each useful vessels to start out with. We are beautifully and wonderfully made, or fearfully and wonderfully made. And whenever we end up going through life, we may fall, we may get chips, we may get cracks, but that alone doesn't make us unuseful. It's what we do after that situation. If we present ourselves to God and surrender to Him and take that action and say, God, I screwed up. I'm so sorry. I'm not perfect. I can't deal with this. You are bigger than I am. Will you please help me? Please fix me. He will do that. Nothing you have done is too big for Him to not fix. He loves you. Just like it says in verse 20, gold, silver vessels, wood, earthenware, each of us is different. Each of us has different issues. Each of us has different uses and beauties and maybe imperfections. But God uses them all. That's what is so beautiful about people. God can use everyone. So I want to challenge you today, as you can see from the kite, is we move. So to be people of action, to be the people that we say that we are, we need to take a stand. God is a God of action. Some people picture God as this far-off being who sits on this giant throne and looks at everybody and takes this magnifying glass and burns people like ants. He's not. I felt that way. I think we all have, but He's not. God is everywhere. He's present in everything that we do. Just as God is a God of action, we should be people of action. God doesn't just sit on His throne. He's busy at work in our lives every single day if we allow Him to be. And we need to be people of action. If you have the desire to go on a mission trip, do it. I don't have money. I don't have time for a fundraiser. Those excuses aren't going to work. If you're going to be a person of action, you need to be a person of faith and say, God, this is what I feel that You want for me to do. I am trusting in You to lead my paths. And He'll do it. Get up. Do something daring. You may not feel comfortable with it. Go witness to somebody. Yeah, it's scary. But is it worth it? Is it worth it to make your Father in heaven proud? Is it worth it to be that worthy vessel of honor? Yes. God is a God of love and mercy. Like I was saying earlier, we get chips, we get cracks, but God can put us back together. We can't put people back together, but we can show that love and mercy of God to other people. We can refrain from gossiping, like the commercial showed us so well last night. So, if somebody comes up to us and tries to gossip, somebody has a dirty joke, somebody tries to pressure you into drinking, drugs, premarital sex, whatever it is, we can be people of action and say no, but with love and mercy tell them, this is why. This is what I believe. If someone wrongs you, instead of holding a grudge, say, look, you know what? I know you messed up, but I know that I would want to be forgiven. And my God who loves me has forgiven me of many, many things. So I, in turn, will forgive you for this small thing that you have done against me. Lastly, God is a just God. He never lies. He stays true to His word. So we as Christians should do that. We don't want to be liars. We don't want to say things that we're not. And the ultimate lie is to say, I'm a Christian, and not act like it. That is the ultimate huge lie. And you are surrounded by other people that maybe think that's okay. But what you have to decide is it okay? In your heart, is it okay to act the way that you do? And if you are acting in the way that God wants you to, then spread that to others. Spread that to those who are struggling with it and dealing with it. Lastly, you don't have to turn there. Many of you have probably heard it, but there's many of you that probably haven't. It's 1 Timothy 4:12. Is don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. Set an example for others. Be people of action. Shake the world up. You see people who are older than you or maybe younger than you, and you like what they're doing, and you want to get in on it and serve God and use your talents for Him, do it. Don't be scared. Don't sit back and wait. Just do it. And God will be with you every step of the way. Thank you.